You're gonna have to cut so much out. I'm sorry.
Do you want a drink?
Yeah, sure. White Russian.
There's a special rung in hell reserved for people who waste good scotch.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
Try the wine.
You slip me a bottle of bourbon, a little glass, and some ice.
It comes in pints?
Oh, I'm getting one.
I drink, and I know things.
Welcome to episode 11 of the Ruminations podcast. I'm Steve. I'm here with Chris. We come back to you, what, 3 months after?
Come back to you now. It's the turn of the talk.
3 months after our last episode.
I haven't been in this room since March.
This is true.
Like, I really haven't.
Our podcasting studio has been vacant since before quarantine started.
But even though we did record the Pixar.
Right, but we recorded the Pixar outside.
Yeah.
So this is the first time we're recording back where we used to record. This year is really, really something else. Really horrifying, which ties directly into the episode we're going to be talking about today. It is now mid-October. You know, time really flies.
When you're not having fun.
So today, we are in a very Halloween mood. And, you know, Halloween is going to be here before we know it.
And it's going to be here on a Saturday. And
nobody can do
anything.
No one
can do anything that's, like, remotely fun. And that's not really true. I'm pretty sure I'm going to have fun. But I'm not going to be able to go to QXD.
Well, are you going to dress up? No.
Absolutely.
Well, where are you going to go?
Here. Here house.
Chris bought himself.
Oh, no, I want to say.
All right.
I almost said Chris. I bought myself Palpatine's cane from Return of the Jedi. It was $20 on Amazon.
Do you have robes to be Palpatine?
I don't, but I'm sure.
You could just find a black blanket.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not the hardest costume to come up with.
You should do it.
No, I kind of want to be like a Buddhist monk or something.
Just to,
I don't know,
like, just not to go anywhere. I'm just going to dress up like a Buddhist monk. Are you going to shave your head?
Be like Aang.
You're going to shave your head?
No. I'm not that committed.
You're not committing.
Okay, I'll be a sadhu.
A naked sadhu?
No.
Are there clothes sadhus?
Yeah, there's sadhus that have clothes.
Are you going to cover yourself in powder?
In crematory ash?
Whatever.
No.
So today we're going to talk about horror movies. And before we started recording, Chris and I ran through a list of all the horror movies we've seen over, what, the last 9 years? How long we've been friends? Because you had never seen horror movies before.
Right, because
we started hanging out.
Yeah, and I would say the first horror movie I really saw was Fright Night, the new Fright Night movie with Colin Farrell.
Yeah. Right, you saw that with me.
Okay.
So that was 2011.
You and Jamarco, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was so
apprehensive.
I was. Actually, I really was. Like, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be scared to death, blah, blah, blah. And when I came out of the movie and I was still alive, it was like, oh my God, I feel like I could climb a mountain. Like, I accomplished something. And then since then, I have watched a lot of horror movies, so I made up my time. Yeah, my dad was not keen on horror movies. He's still not keen on horror movies, but now he doesn't really have a say on what I watch. So
yeah,
I've made up time and we really have seen a lot. I feel like I don't want to say a horror expert, but I feel like I can, you know, very easily talk about horror movies in an educated way.
Well, because you've seen basically
most all of the major ones,
yeah, most
and
of the famous
a lot
ones.
Of offshoots. I mean, I think what I realize with horror movies is that most of them are bad. You know, before I got into them, there was always kind of a fear of them, but it's like most, like a good majority are just bad movies. Then you get like, okay, then there's the enjoyable ones that are good. Then there's the just outright terrifying ones.
Right.
But the terrifying ones really are, you know, a diamond in the rough.
Right. Jeez. And we've talked about a few terrifying ones, like Hereditary.
It is without a doubt the scariest one you've ever seen.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I think there's maybe one or two others that come anywhere close to it. But I grew up with horror movies. My dad, when I was very little, showed me the original Universal horror movies.
Let me just say, you grew up with horror movies. I did not. And you'd think that you're the one that didn't grow up with horror movies, that I was the one that did. So.
Yeah. Personality-wise.
Any of you have younger children out there and you're saying, oh, I don't want to show them horror movies. Well, this is the result.
So some of my earliest memories are watching Frankenstein with Boris Karloff, Dracula with Bela Lugosi, The Wolfman with Lon Chaney, and all the various sequels. I used to play with my Star Wars toys and reenact the monster movies because Burger King came out with the monster toys.
He did. I had them.
In like the late 90s.
I have the Frankenstein. The
Frankenstein was glow in the dark.
Yes.
Yeah. Whereas the other three look normal.
Yeah, maybe I did have the Wolfman. I definitely had the Frankenstein.
The Wolfman came with a coffin or something, and he sprung up. Okay. And then the creature from the Black Lagoon was a water gun.
I had him.
Yeah, and I forget what the Dracula was. He might have, I don't know if he glowed in the dark also. He wasn't translucent. Frankenstein's translucent, which as a kid I had wanted to paint his face. I had wanted to make him look like Frankenstein from the movie. Because I was like, oh, this is weird. He's shiny. You know, little Steve. So anyway, so I grew up with the old horror movies. And my dad was never into the slasher movies because he was already an adult when the movies came out. And I don't know. Like, his pop culture was Steven Spielberg and Star Wars. So I never got the Halloween and the Jason and stuff from him. However, I would go to Chiller Theater, which is a horror convention in North New Jersey, every year with him, starting from when I was 9, and they would have a whole bunch of horror stuff. So I don't know, my personality's not somebody who would like horror movies, but I grew up with them. So in 10th grade, when we had to give our 10-minute speech, which is the big project in English class, I gave a speech on the history of horror movies, and it's one of my proudest moments. And I think we've watched most of the movies that I talked about. It's like the seminal movies. So you start out with Dr. Caligari and Nosferatu from German Expressionism, and then the Universal movies, Frankenstein, Dracula, then like the 50s atomic horror, which I don't think we've watched any of those because they're kind of pointless now.
Yeah, I mean, we've watched like kaiju movies, but
yeah, I mean, that's an offshoot.
That's not like the Blob,
right? It's the Japanese version.
Do you want to know what my 10-minute speech was about?
What was your 10-minute speech about?
It seemed like you want to know.
I do want to know.
New York City.
Okay.
And because I was new to the school at the time, everyone thought I was actually from New York. Because a bunch of people were like, likes New York a lot. Like, oh, you from New York? And I'm like, no.
You could pull it off.
But anyway.
I did research for that speech. And before we get into our topic, so this was the funny story. Was it last year or the year before? I showed you the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which I spoke about in my 10-minute speech. I never watched it, so I did all this research. It was one of the major...
You had never watched it when you did the 10-minute speech?
I think when I did the speech, I hadn't seen it.
Just to say, I don't know if you said it, but 10-minute speech was a sophomore year in high school project in English, yeah. So... I don't know if you mentioned
that. I said 10th grade, but all right. Oh, okay. You're making it clear that...
Well, yeah, because else that's not from Nutley doesn't know what
right.
the 10-minute speech
is. Right, no, I said 10th grade, but just to reiterate, yeah. We were 15?
Yeah.
Okay. So I had never seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but I mentioned it, I think, along with The Exorcist, and then Halloween as what transformed Hollywood. I think when I did my speech, I told my dad, I said, oh, this is a movie from the 70s, like, let's watch it. And I watched it with my dad, who wasn't used to the gory horror movies. And I was 15, and we watched it, and we're like, oh, wow, it's definitely gritty and violent, but okay, like, it is what it is. So I showed Chris and our other friend Nick, and I said, oh, yeah, I watched this when I was 15, and, you know, it's old, you know, it's fine.
I was screwed over by you, and I was screwed over by our other friend Lou, who told me that before I saw it, and he's like, oh yeah, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it's, you know, it's like, it's not that bad. It's just, it's like a bunch of hillbillies in the woods and like blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh. And again, it's like I had seen a lot of horror movies up at this point, and I'm like, most are bad. And even the ones that aren't bad aren't necessarily like terrifying. So I'm like, okay, like Chainsaw Massacre is not going to be as horrible as I thought it was going to be, because Chainsaw Massacre is always a movie I was afraid of. And I was right. The movie was horrifying. I would honestly put Chainsaw Massacre up with... There's Hereditary, is the scariest movie I've ever seen, and Chainsaw Massacre is, like, honestly, like, number two or three.
And we watched them
back to back. We watched Chainsaw Massacre first, then Hereditary, and then I'm like, I need to take a major break and start watching Christmas movies because I can't take it anymore. I have a heart attack. No, I thought Chainsaw Massacre easily lived up to its reputation. It was horrifying. It wasn't just terrifying, it was horrifying.
Yeah, and
by the end of the movie, I'm pissed off at you because I'm like, what are you talking about? You told me it was Child's Play, and it's like, this is horrible.
I don't know if...
I mean, and I will say, for a horror movie, I do like the movie. Yeah. Like, I don't want to sound like I don't like it. I liked it because it was scary, but I'm not in a mood to really watch it again. Same thing with Hereditary.
No, and just to convey that I'm not a psychopath, watching it with you and Nick, I was like, oh, this is not my memory of this movie at all. And I was very disturbed. Again, I enjoyed the movie, but I was
disturbed. Like as soon as that movie started, there was like a close up of some bloody face, and I'm like, it's like I bit off more than I can chew. And like then the guy picks up the kids in the van pick the hitchhiker up. I'm like, oh my god! And then he starts cutting. I'm like, no. This is I already have agita. It's already bothering me. So
it's an entire hour and a half of agita. Yeah, so I don't know if I was disturbed by it in 10th grade and then blocked it out of my memory and just said, told myself, oh, it wasn't that bad, because it was definitely bad the second time. It was actually the same with Hereditary. I watched Hereditary. I might have mentioned this on the podcast. I'm not sure. Because we did discuss Hereditary.
Mm.
That I saw it in Times Square, and it was with a bunch of teenagers, and they laughed the entire movie. And I walked away like, yeah, that was kind of scary, but not bothered by it for weeks. And then we watched it in my house, and I was like,
yeah,
oh, this is crazy.
I mean, horror movies are definitely a different experience in a theater. And if you're afraid, it's actually good, because it's like, all these people are either laughing or making noises and this and that. Like, it does break the tension, but that's not really a good thing if you want to seriously watch the movie.
We've had some fun horror movie experiences in the movies. I think we saw The Nun, which was really bad, but I still wanted to watch the movie, and people were just laughing. Yeah, and I think I yelled at people to shut up.
Mm-hmm. I guess because I'm not going to mention this in my list, but
yeah,
the scene in Texas Chainsaw Massacre where the wonderful, good American wholesome family starts they get grandpa involved, and they start,
and he's like,
90% dead. I didn't think he was alive. I thought it was a dead person, but no, he was alive. And they start hammering the girl over the head.
He's like, Joe Biden.
Okay. And it was just going on, and the girl's just screaming, and it's going on, and I'm like, holy crap, can you end this scene? It was just such a disturbing scene, and like, ugh. But yeah, that's one of the more disturbing scenes I've ever had to sit through, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, anyway, so our main theme today, we want to talk about three underrated horror movies that Chris and I have come to really love over the years. And then when we're done, we're going to name our three favorite moment in a horror movie. So we're going to go in chronological order. So these are three movies we've watched multiple times. It's like every year, every other year we've watched.
Yeah, I would say at least once a year.
So the first movie we're going to talk about is Wes Craven's 1988 film, The Serpent and the Rainbow, which is based on the 1985 book called The Serpent and the Rainbow by Wade Davis. So the book itself was a nonfiction story about, I don't know what kind of scientist he was, but he went to Haiti to research some type of toxin that was used in voodoo that created zombies.
Yeah. Do you want me to just say something about the premise at least?
Yeah.
So I feel like we have talked a little bit about voodoo itself, and I guess I can talk a little bit about the actual practice and beliefs of voodoo. So voodoo in West Africa, which is where Vodun or Vodun, I don't know entirely how to pronounce it, but it's essentially a pagan or pre-Christian religion that exists in West Africa among the Yoruba people, and you find it mainly in like Benin, Togo, Nigeria, places like that. And essentially it's a polytheistic religion. They do, I guess, technically have a one supreme god called Bandye, but again, most of the voodoo belief centers around spirits called Loa. If anyone's that's listening is Hispanic, they might be more familiar with Santeria. And Santeria is very similar to voodoo, but in Santeria, instead of the Loa, you have the Orishas. They're the spirits of the Santeria religion. Anyway, so when the colonization period happens and you get slave ships that are bringing people from West Africa, they're bringing them to Haiti, and Haiti is, you know, colonized and controlled by the French, and the French are Catholic. They start to blend the religion of West African Vodun with Catholicism. So a lot of voodoo that you would find in Haiti or even in New Orleans would be kind of a syncretism of Roman Catholicism and West African religion. And during the time of slavery, a lot of the slaves would use Catholic statues like St. Gerard, St. Joseph, the Virgin Mary, to almost get away with practicing voodoo under the false pretenses of practicing Roman Catholicism. So there are certain voodoo loa that are associated with certain Catholic saints. So if you went to like a Botanica, which is a store that sells various, you know, Santeria and voodoo items, religious items, they would be selling Catholic statues. But the people that are necessarily buying them are not necessarily buying them to pray to St. Peter or St. Gerard. They're praying to, you know, Baron Samdi and a various host of other loa. And then again, that gets brought over to New Orleans, and it kind of takes on another evolution of its own. So New Orleans voodoo is a little different than Haitian voodoo. But all of that to say that in Serpent and the Rainbow, the idea of a zombie, which most people are familiar with, does come from voodoo. So a zombie is, you know, a person that is under the control of essentially a black magician, you know, what they would call a Bakor, is a someone that uses black magic. Serpent in the Rainbow is talking about the actual powder that they use to achieve the zombification of people in Haiti. And at least in the movie, in the book, they're saying it comes from the blowfish, that it's a poison, and they do all these rituals and mix it with other things, and it eventually becomes a zombie powder that, if it has contact with your skin absorbs it, and you essentially become paralyzed, but you're fully conscious. You can feel pain, you can feel all these things, but you can't react to it. So at least in the movie, in the book, people are buried alive, and then the powder wears off, and then they come out of the grave, and it's like, oh, here's a zombie. So there's my voodoo lesson.
Yeah, Yeah, I've been to New Orleans. I've been to the Voodoo Museum. No, of voodoo, but yeah, as you could tell, Chris is much more of an expert. Yeah.
Or the Hoongong.
Yeah, I'm more like Bill Pullman in this movie, who plays the main character, Dennis Allen, who he's tasked by a pharmaceutical company to go to Haiti and discover this drug. And he winds up falling in love with a nurse there. And he's also investigating the mysterious reappearance of somebody who died years before. And they think this guy's a zombie. And he gets tied up with a corrupt official.
The group is called the Tonton Macoute.
Yeah. So okay, yeah. He crosses, I think, is the head of the Tonton Macoute. And he's actually a Bakor. And he's corrupt. And he threatens Bill Pullman a bunch of times. Like, you need to get out of here. And then there's a pretty excruciating torture scene. But this is a movie we watch.
Okay, let me say. What? This is a movie I watched about three times in a 24-hour period because I loved it so much.
Yeah, well, was that the Blu-ray?
Yes, Steve bought me the Blu-ray of the movie for my birthday.
Yeah.
And I watched it, I think, twice by myself, and then I came over to your house and we watched it for my third time because, you know, I have a problem.
Yeah, and when we watch this movie, it tends to be more summer. Like, it's less of a Halloween movie and more of a...
I feel like we watch it alongside Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah. And, but there are some pretty, pretty disturbing images in the movie. Obviously, we're talking about this toxin that turns people into zombies. So, spoiler alert, Bill Pullman is sprayed with the toxin. And he's buried alive. And they put, a tarantula in the coffin with him.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, he has a bunch of dreams where the coffin is, he's in a coffin filling with blood, and I think that's the cover of the box.
Yeah, I'm just looking. The cover of the box is, "Don't bury me, I'm not dead."
Yeah. But it's I think it's a pretty exciting movie.
It's not terribly scary that, you know, if you're really not into horror. I mean, there's a few scenes that are, I guess,
there's some scary things with skeletons and...
But other than that, it's not terrible. It doesn't come anywhere close to some of the other horror movies that we've mentioned.
No.
It's almost like if you were to take Temple of Doom and ramp it up a little bit, you would get that.
Yeah, there's...
Because Temple of Doom's pretty scary. For an adventure movie. So it's like, okay...
Yeah, this is definitely more of an adventure movie with horror elements. I think Bill Pullman's pretty... He's pretty good in it. So you refer to him as what? Someone from Casper?
Dad.
He's the dad from Casper?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I know Bill Pullman from Spaceballs. And
I know him from Spaceballs. Yeah. I know him from...
He's most famous for Independence Day.
But he's the dad in Casper.
Yeah. See, I see Lone Star. And I guess this came out around the same time as Spaceballs, and he's kind of the same character. He never really deviates from that. Yeah. But I think he's fine in it, and there's a crazy scene in the beginning of the movie when he's introduced. He's in the jungles of South America meeting with some shaman, and the shaman gives him some psychedelic plant.
Some ayahuasca or whatever
and
it is.
And then he's running through the jungle, and he meets his totem, which is a jaguar, and that represents him in the spirit realm, and then... That's important later in the movie when he's going toe-to-toe with...
No, it's not. It comes up at the end of the movie. I wouldn't say it's important, but whatever.
When he's going toe-to-toe with the villain. And I think the special effects are pretty good for a 1980s movie. It's funny, we're talking about voodoo. You're wearing a New Orleans shirt.
I'm
wearing the shirt I was wearing when I was in the cemetery and touched Nicolas Cage's tomb.
I'm glad you know the shirt that
wearing this color because I've seen the picture. Do you have any more thoughts on Serpent in the Rainbow? I mean, your voodoo was pretty succinct. My interaction with voodoo is mostly through Live and Let Die, which is the first Roger Moore James Bond movie where the villain is Baron Samedi. So going to New Orleans and seeing people that look like him, it's like, oh, that's the James Bond villain. Whereas Chris is like, that looks like Dr. Facilier.
Right. I mean, I don't know if I have any more to say specifically about voodoo, other than that it, you know, just as I said, it has kind of three variations of West African voodoo, Haitian voodoo, and then New Orleans voodoo. And it, I don't know, I've said this almost probably in every episode, I love religion, I like studying different religions, so, I do, though. You know, voodoo is a little bit more than just magic or a cult, black magic. I mean, it is a cult, but it is a little bit more than just a cult, black magic. There is a kind of a belief system behind it, you know. So that's the only other thing I'd have to say about voodoo.
The second movie on our list is from 2009, though it looks like it's about 20 years older. It's a low budget, it was under $1 million, horror movie directed by Ty West, who I believe has directed TV, but I really don't know what other feature films he's directed, but it's called The House of the Devil. And I was joking around with one of our friends that it's a mumblecore horror movie. It's mumble horror.
Which means?
So mumblecore was an early 2000s independent cinema movement where it's just a bunch of friends getting together, filming with digital cameras, like really not working with a script. It's kind of improvised and very, mm-hmm. very low budget. But Greta Gerwig, who's now a famous director, she directed Little Women and Lady Bird. And she was in Frances Ha, which is a bigger budget mumblecore movie, or a more mainstream mumblecore movie. Greta Gerwig plays a bit part in House of the Devil. She's the best friend of the main character, who's played by Jocelyn Donahue. Don't really know what else she's been in, but her character, Samantha, is a college student, and she's on campus. She's having trouble with her roommate. So the movie takes place in the early 80s, and it's filmed to look like the early 80s.
Yeah, and when I saw this, when we first watched it, you know, it was like, oh, let's watch House of the Devil. I thought it was from the 80s, because I remember throughout the movie, I'm like, oh, what year did this movie come out? And you're like, oh, 2009. I'm like, did it, though?
Steve's a moron.
Yeah. No, I thought it was very, I mean, I was fooled, so I thought it was very believable.
Yeah, so that style movie from the late 70s, early 80s, you have a babysitter character. So she, the girl Samantha, she's having trouble with her roommate, and she doesn't know where she's going to get money to pay for rent because she wants to move out. And she comes across a bulletin board that has a posting for babysitting, and she takes it, she calls up the guy who's played by Tom Noonan, who's a very creepy actor. He was the villain in Manhunter, the original version of Red Dragon. So he has horror in his acting blood.
Is he like 6'5"?
Yeah, he's very tall.
Yeah, he's tall.
He's imposing. For an old man, he's imposing. So she goes to his house, and he says, oh, you're not babysitting a kid, you're babysitting my elderly mother-in-law. And there's an eclipse, and he's going out with his wife, and it's just this very creepy house. And
the girl should have left.
Yeah. The
As soon as she saw the man, she should have left. Yeah. And then when he's like, oh, you're really not babysitting the kid, you're babysitting my elderly mother or whatever, I'm like, nope.
Yeah, so now he pays her an excessive amount of money for her to stay. And most of the movie is Samantha just chilling in the house, and you just get this sense of dread that something's going to happen. And do we want to go into spoilers?
Absolutely.
All right. So early on, when she's at the house, she's talking to the guy. She's talking to Tom Noonan, and her friend, played by Greta Gerwig, leaves.
And she's supposed to pick Samantha back she's up supposed to pick her back at the up. End of the night.
She gets all fed up that, like, oh, Samantha, yeah, why smart. Are you staying in this house? This is stupid, but whatever. And she leaves, and she stops across the street by a cemetery, and she's smoking a cigarette, and some homeless-looking guy stumbles upon the car and knocks on her window, offers her a light, and she's kind of standoffish with him because, you know, he's a stranger knocking on her window.
In a cemetery.
And he shoots her in the face. So we know something crazy is happening because this is before Samantha really gets settled in the house. So she doesn't know her best friend is dead. and she starts hearing noises. She orders pizza, and we see that the pizza man is this homeless guy who killed her friend, but she doesn't know that. And then she actually goes upstairs. And so I think the one mistake the movie makes, besides maybe being a little too slow, is that it shows us what's behind the door upstairs, which is like a giant pentagram with candles everywhere.
And a dead person.
Is there a dead person?
Yeah, there's someone bleeding out in the middle of the pentagram.
Oh, all right. So it's a pentagram with a dead person.
Okay.
Because no, I'm getting just confused with the ending.
Oh, no, it's there.
So now we know even more that something bad is happening, but she doesn't know. I think it would have been better if we discovered that alongside her.
Mm-hmm. I just, my only issue, I love this movie, but my only issue with the movie is that it's a little slow.
Yeah.
Like, it could be a little faster.
Right.
Or a little more could happen.
Right.
But again, I do really like the movie. Yes, in a very short amount of time.
Because then it gets to a point where she actually goes up to the attic, and that's when the eclipse happens and the power goes out, and then she's attacked by somebody we can't see, and then she wakes up and she's tied to the floor with the pentagram, and the family's surrounding her, and they're doing some type of satanic sacrifice with the mother-in-law who's like a demon.
Doesn't look fully human.
It's really crazy. I think the movie is slow for that reason, that it's
building to a crazy conclusion. No, I know why it's slow. I just think it's a little too slow, but
right.
But again, it's a small complaint because I really like the movie.
Yeah, the movie really gets the 80s vibe down. It's less 80s, more like late 70s vibe. It definitely feels more like Halloween.
No, I think it's 80s. Absolutely not. This movie is 80s 1000%.
But it doesn't have the 80s, like Stranger Things 80s feel.
It feels like the 80s to me. Phantasm was 70s.
Right, but Phantasm was 79. So it's like early 80s. Phantasm is basically the same thing.
Was 70s. This movie is 80s. Okay? Stop arguing.
Fine. So the House of the Devil really gets the early 80s
and
late 70s vibe down, not only in the picture quality and the style, but the film techniques. The movie opens with an opening credit sequence that's very upbeat with these bright yellow letters, and it's just very like 70s sitcom.
Mm-hmm. But I was also going to say it's also very 80s because of the content.
Well, yeah.
The satanic scare of the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's based on.
Right.
Like, Satan worshippers are lurking they're lurking everywhere, but where you least expect. So, like, your mailman's a Satanist.
Your priest's a Satanist.
I mean, that's not that far fetched now. Speaking of New Orleans. Yeah, so from a filmmaking standpoint, though, there's a lot of zooms, which is very 70s. I know, but it's a 70s film technique where there's zooms. Like, if you watch The Conversation or Apocalypse Now or The Godfather, like, there are zooms.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any more thoughts on The House of the Devil?
Not really.
All right. So now, fast forward 6 years. This movie came out in 2015. It's by Uli Edel. Don't know who that is either.
I know this, I guess this is really on me, but I never pay attention to who directs a movie. I know you, like, Steve and a few of our other friends always like, oh, like, he direct. I'm like, who is this person? Like, I don't care. But you're right. I'm acknowledging you're right.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is I just naturally don't care who directs the movie, but.
Well, some directors have styles that you seek the movie out because the person directed it. Are you going to disagree with that statement? Yeah.
Other than, like, Tarantino, I don't really, or, like, I don't know, really famous directors like Spielberg, whatever. I don't know, like, the director to me just doesn't come to mind. Whatever. I'm wrong.
You are wrong.
Fine. I'll admit it. Like, the one time.
I don't know. It's like picking up a book and reading the entire book and then going, I don't know who wrote this.
But it's not. But
I mean, it kind of is.
But it's not. Mm.
All right. Regardless, this director's not that important. The movie, I would say it's the weakest of the three. I think why we both like this is because it has two things we really like. It has Nicolas Cage, which I really like. And then it has Samhain and creepy Halloween stuff, which is why you like it.
Correct.
So this movie is called Pay the Ghost. And it involves Nicolas Cage, who's personally my favorite actor, unironically.
God.
I just love everything about Nicolas Cage. And I understand a lot of his movies are bad, but that doesn't make him any lesser.
And to say this movie has, what, a 10 on Rotten Tomatoes?
Yeah, this movie.
Which, okay, like, even if you don't like this movie, it's not that bad.
Yeah, no. So Nicolas Cage plays Professor Mike Lawford. He's being overworked because, what does he want, tenure? Like,
He's a college professor.
Yeah, he's working really hard at an unnamed university in New York. And there's clearly some animosity between him and his wife because of his work ethic. And he's late in coming home on Halloween to take his son trick-or-treating. And his son's dressed like a pirate. And so he convinces his wife. He's like, oh, I'm sorry, I got home late, but I'll take him to the parade. So they go to the village parade.
Yeah, which you didn't know
which existed. Which I didn't know existed.
Which I find bizarre. Yeah, so they live in, like the village area. Lower Manhattan. Like, either East Village or West Village, whatever, Manhattan.
He's buying his son ice cream or something. They're online. And he's talking to the guy, and his son just says, Dad, can I go pay the ghost? And Nick Cage is distracted because it's like, that's a weird thing. I'm buying you ice cream. And he pays the ice cream man, and then he turns around, and his son's gone. And he starts looking for the son. His son, he can't find him anywhere. He's, Charlie, where are you? The kid's not there. So he returns home, and he has to tell his wife that I lost our kid. And the police can't find the kid anywhere, and his marriage suffers even more. And I believe they're separated.
Yeah, after that Halloween.
So it skips forward a year to the next October. And both Nicolas Cage and his wife, they start seeing visions of their son. So Cage sees his son on a bus, and he chases the bus, and then the kid's not on the bus. His wife sees, she watches the kid's scooter, like, drive around the apartment by itself, and then it falls in front of her feet. And Nick Cage is trying to reach out to his wife, like, I think our son's trying to speak to us. He's somewhere in another world, and his wife wants nothing to do with it. And then when the scooter thing happens, she decides, oh, yeah, we have to figure this out.
Right, they have the medium.
Right, so then they get a medium.
It's a bad idea.
Yeah, and the medium is killed by an unseen force, and then when they do an autopsy, all our insides are burned out. So then later, I think it's the same night, all of a sudden his wife seems like she's possessed, and she's cutting herself, and she actually draws this Celtic marking on her arm. And they investigate that symbol, and they find that it pertains to Samhain. And then there's a Samhain reenactment somewhere in Lower Manhattan. And they visit this circle of people praying and chanting, and they're all dressed like animals. And they confront the leader, and she's just like, I'm a school teacher in Brooklyn or wherever.
She's totally from Brooklyn.
I don't know where your son is. So she's, I'm just a teacher. I really can't help you. And they ask her, well, what does pay the ghost mean? And she says, oh, well, the kids say that because if they don't pay the ghost, then the woman who died 300 years before is going to take them. And then they find out that in the 1600s, there was a woman who was accused of witchcraft, and
rightfully so.
Yeah, and they killed her and her three kids.
Yeah, and her three kids, yeah.
So then every year, she kidnaps three kids and brings them to the druid afterlife, and those kids remain living
for a year.
So that means Nick Cage only has a night to then rescue the kids, and he finds the doorway, which is somewhere in the subway. Like, it's somewhere underground. He rescues his son and the two other kids, and then he frees all the other spirits. think that's it.
I think that's it too.
The more important aspect of this movie is the Samhain legend Chris knows more about because he's our resident supernatural expert.
Well, first of all, I when I first saw this movie, I really liked it just because it was very Halloween. Like, I mean, it literally takes place on Halloween. Then, if you know anything about, you know, the history and even his kind of controversy over Halloween, the actual holiday, there's kind of a dispute whether is Halloween a Catholic holiday, is it a pagan holiday, and I think most modern scholars would say it's kind of a mix of the two. So, in pre-Christian Ireland, you have various Celtic festivals, and a lot of them deal with, you know, winter solstices, summer solstices, things like that, like, you know, seasonal occurrences. And one of them, which actually doesn't occur on a solstice, but it is still a festival, is called Samhain. And if you've ever seen it written out, you would probably pronounce it Samhain, but in Gaelic, it's pronounced Samhain, because Irish is a weird language. And it's essentially a harvest festival where you know, the Celts are closing out the end of the harvest, and they're welcoming in the winter. And Samhain, along with a few other Celtic holidays, like Beltane is another one, and there's another one that I can't pronounce because it starts with an L. I can't pronounce it because I don't speak Gaelic. But the idea behind this is that the world that we live in, the physical world, and the spirit world kind of come together, and there's a brief melding of the two. And Samhain is one of those holidays where the two worlds collide. And again, when the two worlds kind of meet in the middle, there's a bit more of free exchange between the spirit world and the real world. And the idea is that you can more effectively communicate with the spirit world. And that, I think, comes through very well in Pay the Ghost. Because the idea is that on Halloween, this is really the only time that Nick Cage can cross over to the spirit world and save his son. So that's the Celtic end of it. Then you get the Catholic Church that is celebrating All Saints Day. The Feast of All Saints Day used to be celebrated in May, and 8th or 9th century, they moved it to November 1st, which means that the eve of All Saints Day falls on October 31st. So it's All Hallows Eve, Hallows being, you know, the saints, the eve of All Saints Day. And a lot of historians think that that's a way for the church to Christianize the pagan celebration of Samhain. Again, I mean, I know enough about it, but I guess I'm not here to say one way or the other. But it seems that you have aspects of the Celtic festival of Samhain plus the Catholic feast day of All Saints Day, and they kind of mix together to form our modern day Halloween. And then, you know, there's a lot of additions that go on after that, you know, with trick-or-treating and things like soul cakes. People would go around and ask for soul cakes, and it's like, oh, I'll go pray for your dead relatives if you give me
cake.
Yeah, like a little treat. And that's kind of the idea behind trick-or-treating. All of that to say that I think this movie, you know, gets some of it right. You know, or I should say at least the Samhain end of it right. That there's a holiday where there's a mixing of the spirit world and the physical world, and that you can kind of cross over back and forth between the two. I really liked the movie. I thought it was a very Halloween movie. You know, obviously not all horror movies take place in Halloween, but this one feels very Halloween.
Yeah, it's about the spirit of Halloween.
Yeah, yeah, and also there's the, would it be considered an anthology, Trick or Treat?
Yeah,
so like the movie Trick or Treat, which I think we both really like, that's another very Halloween movie. it's a horror movie, but it's also very Halloween.
So now, before we end today, we want to talk about our three favorite horror moments in any movie. And I think there might be some overlap between our lists, so I tried to avoid picking moments that you picked. So I think they're different now.
Okay.
I'll start and I'll say the ending of 28 Days Later, which you've never seen 28 Days Later.
I've not seen.
But it's set to the piece of music called In a House in a Heartbeat, which it feels like a heartbeat. It's very slow. And it just slowly builds to a crescendo. And it involves Cillian Murphy escaping from a house that's run by the military while zombies are attacking. And it's just a bunch of things happening at once. And it's just very tense. Then I would say in The Silence of the Lambs, when Hannibal is in his makeshift prison, which is in a courthouse, he orchestrates an escape. He escapes because the police find the cop's body in the elevator, and they're like, oh, if that's the cop, then who was the cop that went into the ambulance with his face all mangled? And that's when Hannibal Lecter rises, and he pulls the cop's face off, and it's him that was in the ambulance as the mangled cop. And then finally, I think the arrival of Father Merrin in The Exorcist is one of the greatest shots in cinema history. I just think it's a really great moment. It's not necessarily scary, but
I recently watched a documentary about The Exorcist, and that specific scene, I think they initially shot that scene with the window open, and the director was like, well, I want the window closed. And they're like, well, how do you want us to get the light out of the window if it's closed? And it's like, I don't know, if that's your problem, figure it out. And they obviously did, but whatever. I just felt like mentioning that, because that's, you also painted.
I painted that picture in high school,
yeah. Yeah, which looks very nice.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, so my three are, so the ending of The Witch, so I saw the movie in the theater. I wasn't really crazy about it. And I'm honestly, I'll say this is all the fault is on me. The movie is, objectively, the movie is great. It's very creepy. It's very disturbing. It's very, you know, it's a very good movie. It just doesn't emotionally get me, or it doesn't bother me, whatever. But the ending of The Witch, when the girl finally figures out that Black Phillip, the goat, the innocent family goat of the farm, is a conduit for Satan, and is the devil, I guess. The devil starts to speak to her, and he asks her to sign his book, and to his. You know, in all the memes, it's, wouldest thou like to live deliciously? And she's like, I would. So she eventually...
Is that an actual meme, or is that just a meme between us?
I don't know. I think it's a meme. But Black Phillip the goat leads the girl out into the woods, and then there's a whole coven of naked witches, like, flailing around a bonfire, and then they all start to levitate. It's an extremely disturbing scene that I love. It's like, it's the best part of the movie. I've seen that scene more than I've seen the entire movie, because I've seen that. I just watched that scene. I think it's one of the best endings of any horror movie out there. So, yeah, go look up Black Phillip. You won't be disappointed. Or will you? I kind of said the Chainsaw Massacre scene from where they're hitting the girl over the head, so I won't mention that one again. But the scene in The Exorcism of Emily Rose at the end, where it's actually a very moving scene. It's not really scary. I mean, yeah, it's not really that scary, but it's a more moving scene where Emily Rose encounters the Virgin Mary, and she kind of gives her the choice to either stay alive and suffer more, but, you know, she'll lead more souls to Christ, or to essentially quit the suffering now, and you can cut, and she can come with the Blessed Virgin into heaven now, and Emily Rose chooses to stay. And I think the movie is a beautiful meditation on redemptive suffering, especially from the Catholic point of view. And in the scene, she gains stigmata, which are, you know, the physical wounds of Christ on your hand, on a person's hands and feet. The scene is just very emotional. It's very moving. It's probably one of my favorite scenes in a movie.
It's literally the exact opposite of the witch's ending.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think I'm just speaking so I didn't realize that, but yes, it's quite the opposite.
I like the Satan worship. I like the dedicating my life to Mary.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. And then finally, my third scene is, I don't know if we've ever talked about this movie on the podcast, but it's a found footage horror film called As Above, So Below.
Yeah, this would have been on my list, but I...
Okay, yeah, so it's... The film is called As Above, So Below. It's a found footage film, kind of in the style of The Blair Witch Project.
See, I think I was terrified. I would say this scared me more than Hereditary, because I've seen Hereditary twice. And the first time dampened the second time.
Okay. Well, the film takes place in the Paris catacombs, which we went to.
Right, after seeing the movie.
After seeing the movie.
It was not as scary.
No. So, but the film takes place in the Paris catacombs. It's like this girl, and I don't know if it's her boyfriend or someone, but they get someone to take them into the Paris catacombs, and they keep going further and further and deeper into the catacombs, and they start finding people that are living there. And there's one scene where they go into a room. This is
miles underground.
Yeah, it's very like we weren't this far underground, no, actually, in the real catacombs, but they're really far underground. And there's just this hooded figure that's very so he's sitting in a chair facing a wall,
cavern.
He's sitting in a chair maybe like 2 feet away from the wall, facing the wall. And it's so disturbing. I know that doesn't convey how disturbing it is, but there's another scene where you see the same figure moving through the catacombs. Oh,
I'm getting chills discussing it, because I could just picture it, because
very scary.
The found footage does the job. I know found footage at this point is cliched and hokey, but if you want to just get disturbing down, like things in the corner that are weird, it gets the job done.
Yes. Also, just to say, the name of the movie, As Above, So Below, is a reference to the philosophical principle in kind of Western occultism that the macrocosm reflects the microcosm. So the universe, the big macrocosm, should reflect what goes on the person's inside, the microcosm. And that's what it's like. As above, you know, the universe, so below, what's going on in your soul. So that's the meaning of the name of the movie.
And I think it starts with them investigating Nicholas Flamel.
It does. You're right. Because when we went to Paris, I was annoyed. I'm like, we didn't visit Nicholas Flamel's house or whatever, so we can find the Sorcerer's Stone, the Philosopher's Stone for you Brits.
I mean,
no Brits are listening. You're right.
But just it historically, the Philosopher's Stone.
Yeah, well, historically, I grew up with the Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeah, that's a movie that I'm afraid to revisit.
Actually, I really want to rewatch it. It didn't bother me nearly as much as like Hereditary or something, but there were a few scenes in that movie that kept me up. And it was just
It's not that it gives me nightmares. It's in the moment.
Oh no! Those specific scenes bothered me when I went home. I had to go to sleep. I'll say most movies don't bother me after the fact, but this one did. There's a few that did. This did. Hereditary, Chainsaw Massacre. They all bothered me.
It's funny. Movies tend to bother me much later. Like, last week I had a dream that was reminiscent of It Follows, where a monster was just following me. Mm-hmm. And I saw that movie 3 years ago and didn't really like it. Oh. All right. Well, that is our Halloween episode. So we will hopefully come out with another episode at least before the end of the year. And I'm not going to say what it's about because I've said that the last two episodes and we've changed it up both times.
To Star Wars. Also, Avatar The Last Airbender is something.
Well, I said I didn't want to commit to anything, but...
Yeah, well...
Well, we're definitely going to do both, but whether or not we get it done in the next 3 months is another story. All right, so we hope to see you guys soon. Thank you for listening, and have a happy Halloween.